Hey, good morning again, and welcome to Mid-Current Church. My name's Stan, I'm the pastor here, and let me just say too, happy Father's Day to all the dads, to all the stepdads, all the foster dads, all the spiritual dads, to any guy who has played the role of a father-like figure. We honor you, we celebrate you, we're so grateful for you, and I'm just thrilled that you would choose to spend of your portion of your day here with us. Father's Day for me, it's a really special thing. It gets more and more special every year for a couple of different reasons. Number one, I am a dad, and that's really cool. Sometimes I have to actually like pinch myself to remember that this is true, to remind myself that I'm a dad. Now, sometimes I say to Erica, we're looking at our family going like, can you believe this? Like that we have three kids in this growing family. So crazy. I mean, not only do we have three kids, but my oldest of them is almost 6 years old, which is absolutely just insane to me to think that I have been now a dad for almost 6 years. But on the flip side of it all, my youngest son, Siggy, is now just 4 months old. And so we're right back at the starting line in many ways. And Erica and I are just trying to soak up every second of these early days with him. I really think these days are the best. He's just such a sweet, harmless, innocent little dude, and we just absolutely love having him in the house. In fact, when he was born, I remember telling my mom how much we were loving it, how much we were loving having a newborn in the house again. And I remember telling her how hard it was. You've got this little thing in your arms, and I remember telling her how hard it was to imagine that very soon you'll be yelling at him, "Will you just get your shoes on now?" Like, I haven't been at this deal very long, but I know enough to know what is right around the corner, and you can't believe how you get from one spot to the next. But honestly, I would not trade a single second of it. Would not trade a single second of it. I love these three kids so much, and they make this day so special for me. Here's the other reason this day is really special for me. I get to stop, and I get to remember my own dad, who has now been gone for just over 12 years. He passed away on January 1st of 2007. That's not a recent picture of either of us, but it happens to be my most very favorite picture of the two of us. And as much as I can't believe that I've been a dad for almost 6 years, I can't believe I've been without mine for now about 12 years. There is really so much that has happened in these 12 years. It's crazy to think about. I graduated college. I got married. I moved to Colorado. I moved back to Chicago. I got a master's degree. I cut my hair. Okay? It's big stuff happening in my life. Okay, that's not it. I moved to Menominee. I had three kids, as I mentioned. I moved to Hudson. I left a stable job at a stable church where I had an office and I had a copy machine and I had more post-it notes than, you know, I even knew what to do with. Left it all to start my own church from the ground up, to create something from nothing. No people, no money, no post-it notes, okay? So many moments over these 12 years when I would have just loved his advice. I would have loved his encouragement. I would have loved his input. I would have loved to just hear his voice. I would have loved to just kind of tell him what was going on or that I can't believe it was, all gone. I would have loved to have so many moments with him. Most of all, 12 years later, I desperately, desperately, desperately want to know that he'd be proud of who I am. Right, that song that we just sang, I think it's so true of how a lot of us feel about our dad. I hope he's proud of who I am. I'm trying to fill the boots of my old man. So true for me. I really do hope that my dad is proud of who I am. I hope he's proud of the man I am. I hope he's proud of the husband I am, of the dad I am. I hope he's proud of the pastor that I am. Really do hope that that's true. But filling his boots, as the song sings, filling his boots is kind of a whole different conversation for me. The truth is, my dad wasn't perfect. He made some mistakes in life and had some kind of larger missteps at various points in his life. And some of those bigger missteps I didn't learn about, I didn't know about until after he passed away. Right, so the truth is, he was not perfect. And as the world measures a man today, he wasn't really incredibly successful either. He never made a lot of money. He didn't have an impressive title. He never managed to climb his way to the top of the, you know, the corporate ladder as much as he maybe hoped he would have. He never really received a whole lot of professional recognition in his life. Right, so as the world measures a man today, as the world thinks about these kind of things, he was never really all that successful. But to my core, I really believe that his life was an incredible success. The impact that he made on my life, the impact that he made on my family's life is absolutely undeniable. And that's a little bit, just a little bit of what I want to talk about today, actually, and what will be just kind of a unique message that I share with you this morning. I want to talk about the things that I remember. I want to talk about the impact that my dad made. I want to talk about the things that I learned, the things that his life modeled for me. There's some really great spiritual truths even that his life exemplified for me as I look back on it all. And so that's the stuff I want to share with you today. And there's really two things that jump out at me most. I mean, I could talk for a while about a lot of different things, but as I look back and think about the things that he taught me and the things that his life exemplified for me, there's really two things that jump out at me the most that I want to share with you today. And I think they'll have a lot to say to you as well. Both of which can be described because of some of the mental pictures and some of the snapshots that I have burned into my memory. So here's the first actual image that comes to mind quickest. Here's the image that comes to mind the most when I think about my dad. This is the couch, same one. This is the couch in the living room of the home where I grew up, just outside of Chicago. My mom still lives there now. And so that couch is there and I see it and can sit in it when I go home. And I'm surprised that you can't see in it like a you know, big dad-sized imprint on that couch, because this is where he spent so much of his time, especially in the later years in his life. When I came downstairs in the morning, especially a Saturday morning, when I came downstairs and I got to the landing of the stairs, and as I looked to my right into the living room, there he'd be, sitting right on that couch, reading, praying, journaling, writing all morning long. And I don't know if he always, to tell you the truth, just in case you're thinking like, well, your dad was like a saint. If I'm being honest, I don't know if he was always this devoted. I don't know if he always exhibited this type of devotion in his life, but in what I'm sure he never expected would be the final years of his life, he was more devoted than ever. See, the last decade of my dad's life, truth be told, it wasn't easy. There was job loss. There was some career uncertainty, in the middle, years of his life. There were some unstable employment opportunities, and that was really hard for him. In a lot of ways, it was a major piece, one of the major pieces that contributed to a growing sense in him that his life was kind of a failure, something that he kind of battled so much in his final years, the sense that he and that his life was a failure. A lot of that had to do with it, right? At the same time, I mentioned some of those missteps, some of those mistakes that he made, ones that he made and actually totally redeemed in the end, which is pretty cool, right? But it was some of those mistakes and missteps too that contributed even more to this growing sense of failure in him. And then when his health took kind of a turn for the worse, somehow in his mind, the way he was viewing things, somehow it was confirmation even more that he had failed there too. And so here's why this couch is such a significant picture to me, because it is a reminder to me that when life got harder, he dug deeper. Right? When his life got harder, he dug deeper. Stashed just underneath that couch, I mean, right on the floor on that carpet, stashed underneath the couch were all the books, all the Bibles, all the journals, all the notepads that he used while he sat there. And the cool thing was, after he passed away, we discovered more and more of it all. Like it was some kind of, you know, like hidden treasure that we had stumbled upon. I'm not joking you. We found more and more of it all. More of the books that he was reading. More of the prayers that he was praying. More of the thoughts that he was recording with his own hand on pen and paper. I can just see his handwriting now. Discovered more and more and more of it. Powerful stuff. Honest reflections in some of the most sincere and heartfelt prayers as he poured his heart out onto paper and out to God. And all of this exemplifies something for me. It models something so well for me, and it reminds me of something that is so true, and it really kind of calls me toward something more. It was in a recent sermon by a pastor named Craig Rochelle that I heard him say that we are not called to be famous, that we are called to be faithful. And when it comes to my dad's life and what it still teaches me today, I'd say it like this, that we are not remembered. We are not remembered for being famous. We're remembered for being faithful. When I think about my dad, when I think about his life, when I think about what it taught me and what it teaches me now and what it calls me to now, I think about this. I realize that we are not remembered for being famous. We are remembered for being faithful. It's in Psalm 115, verse 1, that David, he's the man that's known as the man after God's own heart. It's quite a title. It's the kid that defeated Goliath, the Philistine giant. It's quite a resume. He's the king of God's people. He ascended to the top, and he's a military mastermind. He says this in Psalm 115, verse 1. He says, "Not to us, Lord, not to us, but to your name be the glory because of your love and faithfulness. Not to us, Lord, but to your name be the glory because of your love and because of your faithfulness." The man who in a lot of ways had very many reasons to say, "Check me out. Look at everything that I've done. Look at what's said of me. Look at what I've accomplished." The very man who had the resume of all resumes, he says, no, not to me. Not to us, but to you be all the glory. To you be all of the honor. To you be all of the attention. To you be all of the fame. This life is not about being famous. It's about being faithful to the one who was first faithful to us. And that's why we're remembered long after we're gone. My dad's life, as I think back on it, as I remember him, my dad's life was a perfect example of this. Because when we look back and when we remember him and when we tell stories about him today, we don't talk about his achievements. And we tell stories all the time about him. We remember him all the time, especially on a weekend like this. We don't talk about his achievements. We don't talk about his salary. We don't talk about his, you know, job title or his job descriptions. We don't talk about how big his office was or how many employees we have. We don't sit around and say, "Hey, remember that one time when Dad got transferred from the smaller campus in Seattle to the larger campus outside of Chicago?" No, that's not what we talk about. When we sit around and remember him, the stories we tell are the stories of him sitting on that couch. The stories we tell are of how when life got harder, he dug deeper. That's what we remember. That's what we talk about. He may not have been famous, and truthfully, he wasn't. He may not have been perfect, and he wasn't that either. But he was faithful to the God who was faithful to him. In fact, I was texting with my mom this week, telling her about what I was going to share about today. She always wants to know, "What are you talking about this week?" You know. So I'm texting her, telling her about what I'm going to be talking about today. And I say, "Yeah, I'm going to be talking about, you know, about Dad a little bit. I'm going to talk about how, you know, we don't remember him for being famous, but we remember him for being faithful." And here was her response to me. She said, "And he was faithful until the end." So she said to me when I said, "I'm going to talk about Dad and how faithful he was," she said, "and he was faithful until the end." And she really meant, this was new to me this week, she really meant until the end. I didn't know this until just this week talking with her, but my mom told me that he sat in that very couch even on the morning when he died. It was actually my brother and I who... We found him in bed in the later morning hours on New Year's Day, but apparently that was only after he had gone back to bed after not feeling very well. He had already been downstairs that morning, and my mom says that she heard him get up, she heard him go downstairs, and she knew that he was doing his reading in the one place where he did it most, that living room couch. He was faithful until the very end. Faithful to the one who was faithful to him. And when his life got harder, he dug deeper. And that's why we remember him today. That's why I remember him today. And so my hope is that the same thing would be said of each and every one of us. My hope is that our lives from this day forward and for so long from now, my hope is that our lives would echo these words from King David. Not to us. Not to us, Lord, but to your name be the glory. To your name be the honor. To your name be all the fame. Why? Why is that my hope? Why is that my prayer? Because we are not remembered for being famous. We are remembered for being faithful to the one who was faithful to us. And I thank my dad for a real life picture of that in the life that he lived until the very end. Okay, here's the second image. There's just two things I wanted to share. That's the first, and here's the second. The second image that's burned into my memory, and unfortunately, I don't have an actual picture of this one to show you, but I can assure you that I can still see it so vividly, as clear as any picture. I can see it right in here. It's a picture of my dad looking on at me. Picture of my dad looking back at me from the sidelines. Picture of my dad looking on at me from the front row or from wherever it was that he was watching me do what I was doing. He was more proud of me and my siblings than anything he ever did. I kid you not, more proud of us than anything he did or anything he ever accomplished on his own, and you could see it on his face. Okay, as a teenager, I picked up his old guitar in the closet, and I started playing, and I started learning how to play guitar, and I started playing at little coffee shops around town. I started playing at summer camps, and I started playing in churches. And in college, even, I got a job leading the music at a church, and there was nothing more that my dad loved than watching me play and watching me sing. I can just picture him sitting right out in the seats where you are, staring right back out at me. And the crazy thing was, my job as a worship leader, my job was to do every single thing that I could to get people to engage and to get people to participate and to get people to sing. And despite the fact that my dad loved Jesus, he never opened his stinking lips. Not once. I kid you not. You look out there, he ain't singing a single word. Why? Because he was sitting there staring at me. And you could see the pride beaming on his face, okay? That was just music, okay? Set that aside. Let's talk about sports, whole nother story. In my dad's eyes, okay, and I'm not exaggerating here, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. In my dad's eyes, I was the best player on every team I ever played on in any sport that I ever played. Every practice, end of every practice, end of every game, same conversation. You know, Stan, I really think you're the best one on the team. You know, I'm watching. I think you pass better than any kid out there. Stan, I think your shot is real. I think you are the best one on the team. And as nice as that was to hear, I'm not making any of this stuff up. As nice as that was to hear, I remember when I first started to realize, I don't think that's true. It was during my first season of ice hockey that I played just outside of Chicago. And hockey was the first sport that I really had to learn. I didn't just kind of like naturally, you know, pick it up. And so our very first practices were really, really, really hard. They were brutal practices. There was forward and backward, you know, figure eight skating drills, and there were speed drills. And I always remember the one where we had to sprint to the blue line, jump onto our stomachs, slide on the ice, and then get back up onto our skates before we hit the red line. And if you couldn't get onto your skates before you hit the red line, you had to do it again. And I was the last one to finish every single time. It was hard, the hardest sport that I had ever learned to play. So, and then game started, and I got a little better. I played left wing, and I did all right. I even scored a hat trick one game. But the one thing became very clear to me, that there were some cats on my team who knew how to play hockey. And I knew it. All the other kids on the team knew it. The coaches knew it. It seemed like everybody knew it, except my dad. I come home from a hockey practice, come home from a hockey game, same thing. Dad, I really think you're the best one on the team. The way you move out there, the way you skate on the ice. I remember thinking, you know, Dad, I don't think that's true. I don't know how to skate. I'm not even sure I know what offsides is yet. Like, I don't think I'm the best one on the team. But in his eyes, I kid you not, in his eyes, I truly, genuinely was. Here's the point. This is just a small glimpse of the way that my dad honestly thought about me and my brother and my sister. His pride in us and his love for us had zero conditions, zero prerequisites, zero requirements attached to it. It was not dependent on something that we did or didn't do or who we were or who we were not. And my sister said it best at the words that she shared at my dad's funeral. She said that my dad's love, she said this about our dad, she said it was our dad's love that was the closest thing to God's unconditional love that she would ever experience. And I think all three of us would agree. I know I would. It's the closest thing to God's love that I think I will ever experience. Zero conditions, zero prerequisites. See, one of the great church leaders, he's gotten known as Paul. A lot of times in churches and places, we refer to him as the Apostle Paul. He says this about God's love for us in Romans chapter 8. He says, "For I am convinced," he says, "I'm sure, I'm absolutely positive that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all of creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." This list here, it's really meant to say everything. There's nothing. It's meant to include everything in that list. It's not just referring only to the few items that they refer to on these lists. Each of those pairs, in fact, this is kind of interesting. Each of those pairs, life, death, angels, demons, you know, past, present, it's actually, the way that it's used here, all those are just literary devices, actually, in the way that it was written. Literary devices to kind of, you know, say something more. Similar to how we would use phrases like sick and tired. You ever use that phrase? I'm sick and tired of this, right? When we use the phrase, I'm sick and tired, we're not actually saying that we're like physically ill. We're not actually saying like we're physically exhausted. It's just a phrase that we use to kind of point to something else. It's just a phrase that is meant for us to say like, ah, I'm annoyed or that, or I'm fed up, or I'm frustrated. The same thing is happening here with this list, these pairs that are used. All these pairs strung together like they are meant to communicate something larger. They're meant to communicate a bigger meaning, that there is zero, zilch, nothing, nada, anywhere, nothing that can separate us from God's love for us. It is the one love that truly has no conditions, no prerequisites, no requirements, no expectations attached to it. And that was so much easier for me to understand. So much easier for me to understand that that's the kind of love that God had for me, because I had a dad who demonstrated the very same thing. Interestingly, sociologists today say that it's common. There's studies that are kind of looking into these things. Sociologists say today that it's common for people to perceive God is like the fatherly figures in their lives. So if a dad is caring and patient and concerned, you know, then children will believe that God has those same characteristics. And the opposite holds true when a father is maybe more so harsh or judgmental or absent. And one prominent sociologist said, even though children know intellectually that that God is fair and that God is loving and that God is kind and patient. It's hard for them to relate to God at a gut level in a deep way if their own father is not that way. And when I think about that, and I think about this picture of my dad's life for me and what it taught me and what it modeled for me, what that all says to me is this, that our lives paint a bigger picture than just ourselves. I mean, that's what that says to me, right? Our lives, they paint a bigger picture than just ourselves. My dad's life painted a bigger picture than just his own life, okay? And this is research about dads, but I think the sentiment, if you were to think about it, I think the sentiment is so true. That our lives, they paint a bigger picture than just ourselves. We have the chance with the way that we live our life to paint a bigger picture. We have the chance with the way that we live our lives to point to Jesus, to be the real life example in the flesh to others around us. We have the chance to be the example of the unfailing love that God has for his people. So dads and uncles and grandparents and parents and teenagers, anybody, we have the opportunity for the next generation behind us. And that goes for any of us here this morning. Mom, dad, aunt, uncle, kid, teen, adult, whatever. We have the opportunity with the next generation coming up behind us, whichever generation that is, we have the chance for the next generation to develop a clearer and a fuller and a more loving picture of God, of who God is and how he loves us. We have the chance to help them develop a better picture of God because of who we are and because of the lives that we live day in and day out. So let me just ask you this today as I just kind of wrap up these thoughts I wanted to share with you. Let me ask you this today. What picture are you painting with your life right now? How are you helping other people around you to see a bigger picture? How are you helping other people around you or the people under you or coming up behind you? How are you helping the people who are influenced by you every single day? How are you helping them to understand something greater? How are you helping them to understand who God is and what he is really all about? It's a really important question for us to ask ourselves because our lives will paint a bigger picture than just ourselves. And my dad modeled this so well for me, and it gave me a great example of how to do this in my own life. Some of you have a dad like mine. Could not have loved you more. So great, and it's a great example to follow. Some of you had a dad like my wife Erica's. When we were talking this week, she said this, that she said that it's always hard for her when people talked about God like he was some kind of rules enforcer. She can never connect with that. She can never relate to this image of God that he was just some rule enforcer, because that's not the picture that her dad painted for her. Whenever Erica talks about a dad in this capacity, it's the same thing. She talks about how he made life so fun. She talks about how he made being together fun, how he made free time fun, how he made family fun. He made church fun, and he made faith fun and exciting. So Erica couldn't relate to people who saw God as this enforcer of rules. It was so much easier for her to grasp that no, God's not an enforcer of rules. He's an enhancer of life. Any of these things that we think of as rules, right? Any of these instructions that God gave to us, they were meant for our own good. They were meant to preserve the freedom that we have. They were meant to enhance the life that we had been given. And Erica had an easier time understanding that from when she was young, because she had a dad who modeled it for her each and every day. He painted a bigger picture than just his own self. And so for her, it's a great example to follow. But here's the other side of that. Some of you are saying, hey, well, good for you guys. Hey, lucky you. But I didn't have a dad like that. Maybe you're saying, I don't have a dad like that. I didn't have parents like that in my life. I don't have adults like that in my life. I don't have that kind of example to follow. That can be hard. I'm not denying that. My own mom will admit that she didn't totally have a dad like that. So I was talking to her about this week. She said, yeah, I didn't have a dad like that. He loved her, yes, but she was, and she'll tell you this, she tells me this, she was kind of afraid of him in many ways. In the same texting conversation, she said to me this, she said, he was a stern disciplinarian with an explosive temper, and mistakes were not tolerated well. And so in a lot of ways, she kind of lived in fear of him, and she will admit that this has, to this day, faithful woman in her 60s, she will admit to this day it has colored the view that she has of God even today. And so I get it, right? That can be a real thing that many of you are saying right now, hey, well, you know, what do I do? I don't have a dad like that. I don't know what kind of example to follow. That can be a real obstacle. And so if that's you in any way, here's what I want to say to you. The best gift on Father's Day, or if it's on Mother's Day, or if it's on some other day that celebrates you, the best gift is not one that you receive. The best gift is the one that you can give to those that are coming up behind you. The best gift that you can give to your kids and to the future generations is to reverse that trend. Right? To start a new chapter and to start painting a new picture, right? Paint a better picture and to start leaving a different legacy. To commit yourself to learning more about who God is. Commit yourself to learning more about his heart for his people and committing yourself to modeling it well as best as you can, as much as you can learn, as much as you can absorb, right? The best gift you can do is to commit to modeling it well for everyone around you, because our lives, they paint such a bigger picture than just ourselves. And so this might be the very best gift that you could give. And that's going to be my prayer for us as I wrap here up. I'm going to be praying that is a gift that every single one of us would pass on to those around us. A gift to reverse the trend, to start painting a different picture, because all of our lives do paint a bigger picture than just ourselves. And so I'm praying that this is a gift that we would pass on for years and generations to come. Let me wrap up this morning and pray that prayer for all of us right now. God, we pause here this morning and we give you thanks for who you are, God, to read these stories that Brian did about the prodigal son and to read the truth about who you are and how much you love us, how the heart of a father that you have beats so much for us. God, we thank you for those kind of reminders. For some of us, we hear it and we know it, and it's just good to be reminded of it again. For others of us, God, that it's kind of new. We may not, you know, we may not have ever really heard or experienced or believed that you had that kind of love for us, God. And so for anybody here like that, I pray that somehow, some way, God, you would put it on their hearts here and now so that it would stick, God, that they would know that your love for us is fierce and unconditional, God. Pray that we would know that, God. We thank you for who you are in our lives and what you do for us, God. And I thank you for my own dad. And God, I thank you for all the dads here. And I just thank you for the ways that the life of a dad, the life of a mom, of a brother, a sister, whoever, God, I just am grateful for the way that we can do so much good, that we can leave such a legacy. And I'm praying, God, that you would help every one of us to do that. Wherever we are, God, maybe we don't have great examples to follow. Maybe we don't have a great track record going behind us. Maybe we don't have a great resume built up so far. God, I pray that every single one of us here would know that we can stop that in its tracks and we can start charting a new course, God. We can start painting a new picture. And I pray that you would help us to do that, God. And I pray that you would help every one of us here to spend our time, to spend our energy, to spend our breath on this earth concerned most with being faithful to you, not being famous for what it is that we do, God. I pray that we would commit our entire selves to being faithful to you because you were first faithful to us. God, those are the reasons why I think that we will be remembered, and those are the reasons why your name will be made great because of it all. So God, we honor dads and stepdads and all the people who have played the role of a dad. We honor them today, and we thank them, God, and we thank you for being a heavenly father who loves us so much. We pray all these things in your name. Amen.